Morning, Chris Yelland, energy analyst and MD of EE Business Intelligence, joining us on the line. Chris, a very good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning to you and your listeners.
At least we have what looks like a plan now, Chris, where Eskom is telling us for the next 18 months, guys, you will have to endure load shedding. And we need to have load shedding in order for us to take care of some of the units that needs maintenance and repair work to be done. Is it going to be enough, though, those 18 months?
Well, they have talked also about 2 years, and I've heard talk about 3 years. I don't think there's any specifics on that, and I think we shouldn't regard 18 months as some sort of cast in stone timeline. But it does give an indication that this is not a short-term thing that we're experiencing right now, and that is going to be continuing for some time as they get down to what they call their new philosophy maintenance, which is really getting back to the maintenance specified by the original equipment manufacturers. Now, it's like, can you imagine when you buy a new car, you get a service book, and it tells you exactly what you've got to do at each service after each, let's say, 20,000 kilometers, and it's specified in detail. And when you buy such a car, you better stick to that maintenance regime. Otherwise, the original equipment manufacturers sort of wash their hands of you and say, well, you didn't look after the car properly. We're not going to stand good for any guarantee or performance claims that we've made. So Eskom now are saying, put aside the way they used to do it, really driven by operational circumstances and whether they had sufficient space to do maintenance or not. You can't just skip a maintenance on a car because you're busy and have got a long trip to Durban ahead of you. No, you actually do that maintenance so that you don't have problems on the long trip to Durban. And so Eskom are getting back to the maintenance requirements of the OEMs.
And at the end of the 18 months, and I certainly appreciate that that is not cast in stone, where will that get us to as, I suppose, Eskom and South Africa?
Well, I think that's the crux of the matter. And I don't think we should expect too much from maintenance because, of course, it is necessary. It is necessary in order to arrest the decline of the energy availability factor. But in the short term, it's actually going to increase the level of unavailability because the more units you take out for planned maintenance, the less units you have available for meeting demand. So in the short term, we're going to see further decline in the energy availability factor. But hopefully, this new maintenance regime will kind of stabilize the EAF, or the energy availability factor, which has been declining year on year for several years. And really, they've got to stop that decline. What I think we need to be careful about is assuming that this is going to suddenly start to increase the energy availability factor. That's not the case. In the short term, when I talk about short, in the next 18 months, it's going to actually worsen the availability. But thereafter, I hope it will stabilize the availability. But the problem is it'll stabilize it at a very low level. And I don't think we can expect it to suddenly start to increase because there are diminishing returns from maintenance of very old plants. And these are, in many cases, very old, even past end-of-life plant. And it's like, again, with the analogy of the car, as plant gets very old, you need to do more and more services of fixing of all kinds of things that keep on failing because it's so old. And there is a time that comes when it is simply no longer economical to continue this maintenance because it becomes too frequent and becomes too expensive and it has diminishing returns in terms of effectiveness. And so one has to look beyond maintenance. Maintenance is of old plant can get you certain distance, but thereafter you have to start thinking about disposing of that old plant and buying a new car. So I think one cannot just assume that maintenance is the solution to all the problems. No, we've got to actually start thinking about new plant and new plant that works, not like Medupi and Kusile, which has been under construction now for like 14 years and is not delivering what it should.
Which was going to be my next question, because Kusile and Mudupi were supposed to be those brands spanking new cars with all that additional generating ability and capacity, obviously meet whatever the future demands for South Africa are. And according to Andre de Reiter, Kusile, Mudupi and Coburg are going to be the focus areas as far as refurbishments and maintenance work and obviously design work, I would imagine, for Kusile and Mudupi. Are you suggesting that that's not going to be enough, that we need now a brand new power generation plant in South Africa?
We need many, many new generation plants, not big ones like Mudupi and Kusile and Coburg, but literally hundreds of medium and small embedded generators on customers' premises. That is where the short-term new generation capacity is going to come from. By short-term, I'm talking about in the next 2 years. But let's just get back to Mudupi and Kusile, because first of all, Coburg. Coburg is a sort of a plant approaching midlife. And at midlife, you need to do deep-level midlife refurbishment. And that is what is happening at Coburg. Its license expires in 2024, in order to extend its license, you have to do those deep level review and upgrades to bring it in line with best practice. And that's going to require some outages that have to be managed very, very carefully. Mudupi and Kusile are new plants, but they are performing like old plants. And Eskom is going to have to start shutting down some of these new generation units that have come on stream. There's 5 units that are in commercial service at Mudupi, only 1 unit in commercial service at Kusile. But they're all experiencing design and execution flaws and problems that have to be rectified. So that's going to require downtime for significant times, many months, in fact, for each generator unit in order to fix the problems. So the new plant should have been helping improve the availability of the Eskom fleet. The reality is it has been dragging it down, and they have to do these fixes, and hopefully when they have done the fixes, they will become more reliable and more available. But in the short term, Mudupi and Kusile are part of the problem. They are performing like old plants.
Ooh, all right. Andre de Reiter saying that they do not want to go to government cap in hand to ask for more money in order for them to do the work that needs to be done. And what I'm hearing from you, Chris, particularly when it comes to Kusile and Mudupi, they will, as you say, either need to shut down certain parts of those two generation plants or actually ask for more money in order to do the necessary work to improve the output from those two units.
You know, of course, Eskom is going to be going cap in hand. It is already cap in hand to Eskom, to government. It's asking government to take over, you know, at least half of its debt and service, and for government and the taxpayer to service Eskom's debt. It's already got a handout from government of 150 billion rand over the next 10 years. Remember, there was 23 billion rand a year for the next 3 years? Well, over the next 10 years, it's 150 billion. That is the handout that is, government is already giving. And the thing is, you need to start now dealing with underlying financial, operational, and environmental issues at Eskom. Otherwise, you're going to be giving out handouts forever, because at the moment they are using these handouts really for operational reasons, to carry on operations, because operating revenue at Eskom is not sufficient at the moment to cover even half of Eskom's debt service commitments. So when you throw this kind of money at Eskom, it's just going on meeting its operational requirements and also paying interest due on existing loans, refinancing of existing loans. And yesterday at the media briefing, really very little, if no attention, was given to these financial sustainability issues and environmental sustainability issues. Yesterday was all about operational issues, load shedding and maintenance. But the other issues are as deep, if not deeper, and present immediate cash flow problems at Eskom that need to be addressed. The refinancing of Eskom's debt one way or another, whether it's by government taking it over, whether it's from debt equity swaps, whether it's from a green climate funding arrangement and various other financial instruments, unless these Eskom's debt is dealt with, it is unsustainable.
The CEO also mentioning that Eskom is undergoing a process of finalizing the board members of the three units that Eskom will be dissolved into. Will that help in any way? We know that this was an announcement made by the president in February of 2019 during the State of the Nation address that we'll have those three units to Eskom. This is obviously Eskom realizing that plan.
It's not going to help financially or operationally in the short term, but it is still very necessary. Because unless you make a start with the restructuring and dealing with the underlying structural issues and problems at Eskom, you will never solve the underlying problems. So you do have to make a start in order to begin this journey of restructuring, which frankly is a process that is likely to take 5 to 10 years in its entirety. And the starting point is to divisionalize Eskom into three divisions, whereafter those divisions will become legal entities or subsidiary companies of Eskom. And after that, there are further steps envisaged, for example, in the roadmap outlined by Minister Pravin Gordhan, Minister of Public Enterprises, where they would carve out the transmission company out of Eskom to create an independent system and market operator to give equal and non-discriminatory access to the grid, not only to Eskom generators, but to a wide range of other generators, public-private partnerships, municipal generators, independent power producers, and literally thousands of embedded generators on customers' premises. All of these new generation sources need to become part of the solution, and this can only take place if there's an independent system and market operator. At the moment, Eskom controls access to the grid, but it's also the 95% generator of electricity into the grid. So one needs to create the necessary structures in order to encourage a diversity in the generation sector and electricity market in line with best practice globally.
Another aspect of the 9-point plan was the recruitment of critical skills that are in dire shortage, obviously, at Eskom at the moment. A couple of questions related to that. What are these skills that need recruiting for, and can we get them in South Africa, or are we going to have to look elsewhere?
So I think the first thing that the Chief Operating Officer, Mr. Jan Oberholtz, found when he joined Eskom about a year or something ago was that there was a really critical skills problem at the power stations themselves. Too many people at head office, not enough people on the power stations themselves, and in fact, almost all of the power stations had acting power station managers as a result of really poor appointments in the past, corruption, and they got rid of a whole lot of power station managers. And in place, he found, you know, all these acting power station managers, and that has apparently been addressed. They now have permanent full-time power station managers at virtually all of the power stations. The next level, of course, is the layers beneath power station manager. These were found to be severely depleted. They've redeployed people from the head office at Eskom back to the power stations. They've also got permission. They got permission from the board to recruit an extra 2,000 people in generation to fill a wide range of vacancies and appointments that were really inappropriate. And they have been filling those not only with people from South Africa, but also with outside people. And the third area, just to mention, is the area of maintenance. Eskom was trying to do a lot of this maintenance itself, and they have indicated that they're now going into a new process where they're going to form partnerships or contractual arrangements with the original equipment manufacturers who have these skills that they deploy all over the world to maintain their own plants. And who knows better how to maintain your plant but the original equipment manufacturer? I mean, it's like a car, getting back to that old car analogy. When you buy a new car, you know, the OEM tells you, you know, for the next 150,000 kilometers, you must get it properly maintained by us. by the manufacturer, their service facilities, because they are specialists, they have necessary equipment. This equipment is very sophisticated and complicated. And you cannot just go out to tender and allocate those maintenance contracts to Tom, Dick, and Harry. You really don't have the knowledge, the resources, the skills, and the in-depth information on the original equipment itself. No, you contract with the original equipment manufacturer in a proper service arrangement that can bring these skills to the table. So I think Eskom is now looking to these specialized service skills coming in contractual arrangements with the original equipment manufacturers. And yes, you do need to ensure transfer of skills, localization wherever possible, just like in these car manufacturers. They don't send your car back to Japan to be serviced. No, they set up local service facilities so that people can take their cars in. But at least they are accredited, authorized service centers with the necessary knowledge and equipment.
Let's keep going with the car analogy then, and I suppose shine the spotlight on a statement you made a while ago that we don't need massive new generating powers, power units, but rather smaller ones that will be dotted all over South Africa. Is South Africa even thinking in that light? Is government, is legislation, is the infrastructure making it possible for that to be realized?
Well, I think government is starting to think about it very late, but still hasn't done anything about it. So they're thinking about it and perhaps talking about it, but actually at the moment not doing anything, which is a big problem. So government and the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy need to start putting their minds to deploying new generation capacity and options quickly. Now, they did go recently out for a request for information. Now, a request for information is very far from a request for proposals or for actually getting down to placing contracts, but you have to start. But I do think we are taking too long, and we're not looking at the potential for the quick deployment of what we call distributed generation on the customer's premises, or in other words, embedded generation, which is the only way in which you can bring new capacity on in the next 2 years. There are no other really viable options. And the beauty of this option is that it's easy to do. All you need to do is remove the regulatory red tape that holds these things back. So it's more a case of government doing some paperwork exercises, putting out the right signals and messages and the right regulations, and allowing customers to respond and to become part of the solution in South Africa. This trend is happening globally, away from centralized power generation and transmission of electricity on huge grids to building distributed generation close to the customer. This helps relieve the burden off the central generation, and it can be deployed quickly and flexibly at no cost to government, because it's done at the cost of the customer. It's mounted at the customer premises, or it's near the customer premises, and the customer contracts with this provider to provide electricity to help and to meet some of its electricity requirements that cannot easily be met from the grid, as we can see, because there is load shedding at present.
Chris, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Quite a comprehensive conversation. Chris Yelland, energy analyst and MD of EE Business Intelligence.